You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, perfectly pumped pub problem punchers. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 11, and of course, I'm your humble host, Karen. And along with me are our club of classy and clever clue-clinging cluckers.
Wow. Wow. Be careful there at the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would you be the mother clucker?
Oh, I would be the mother clucker.
Well done.
We're a very clucky bunch.
I am Colin.
Dana.
And I'm Chris.
Woo!
Yay!
Really quickly, we have, I want to address our carryover question from last week, and it was the riddle I wrote, which now in retrospect I figured I could have edited that a little bit, and here it is. It is 19th century is the time you seek, for the great battle was fought on sea, two sides against one, fleet versus fleet, name me the ships of double identity. I got actually a lot of answers for this one, so it is my fault as the puzzle writer to not be clear. But what I was looking for is 19th century, there's the Battle of Trafalgar was fought in the early 1800s, and it was fought on sea, one of the big decisive battles. And it was two sides against one. It was the French and the Spanish kind of ganged up together versus the British.
Right.
And name me the ship of double identity. So what I was looking for was there are two ships with the same name, each ship on both sides. One of them is Neptune. Mm. Neptune, actually, there was a French Neptune. There was a Spanish Neptuno. And there was a British Neptune. Huh. And there was another pair, too, and it was Achille. There was Achille on the French and Spanish side, and there was Achille on the British side. Huh. And the other answers I got include HMS Victory, which was also in Battle of Trafalgar. There are a lot of ships that were renamed or rechristened as other name, hence there'd be a double identity. But you know what? I accepted all of the answers, and we selected all the wizards.
That was a hard one.
It was hard.
That was tricky.
I should have edited more a little bit.
But the ultimate trivia nugget there is, yeah, so they, multiple ships, same name. So they really were not very creative in ship naming back then.
The Neptune.
Yeah.
The Victory.
A lot of them are based on a Greek gods or, right, you know, that kind of the Roman lore. So a lot of repeated names.
They need Don Draper on the job.
Yeah, they need a better marketing.
The Dream Crusher.
Yeah, I were to name my own fleets of ships, they would have very funny names.
I'd name my
Wind Beneath My Wings.
Striking fear into the hearts of all of your naval enemies.
I will make you cry.
Congratulations to the winners. So let's jump into our general trivia segment. All Pop right. quiz, hot shot. Everybody get your barnyard buzzers ready.
Right.
I got my random questions here, and here we go. Blue Wedge. What nickname for the Santa Clara Valley was popularized in the 70s? Dana.
Silicon Valley?
Correct.
Oh,
Silicon Valley.
Yep, nice.
Santa Clara Valley.
I'm going to get in trouble for not getting that one.
Exactly. Pink Wedge, pop culture. The father of what actress was the first Westerner ordained a Tibetan Buddhist monk?
I'm going to guess Angelina Jolie.
Incorrect.
Hmm.
Father of what actress? I couldn't tell you.
It is Uma Thurman.
Ah. Huh.
Her father, Robert, gave up his robes in order to devote his life to academia.
Huh.
Didn't know that.
That's a good one.
Yellow Wedge. What is both an amphibian and the first name of the leader of the 1994 Republican Revolution?
That would be Newt.
Yes!
Gingrich, recently back in the news again.
Purple Wedge. The disapproving father of what artist referred to her marriage to Diego Rivera as an elephant and a dove?
Frida Kahlo?
Yes.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
And we have Green Wedge for science. If an animal is diurnal, what is it doing at midnight?
It is sleeping.
Correct.
Yes.
Diurnal animals are active during the day.
Yes, ma'am.
Diurnal versus nocturnal. And the last question, Orange Wedge, what flavor was the original filling in Hostess Twinkies? Whoa.
Banana.
Oh my God. Wow.
That is just pure trivia. Like, I just know it because I know it.
Well, it makes sense. No, they're reason. Yellow, yeah. Right? You know?
Yeah.
You...
yeah. Yep.
So it was replaced by vanilla during a World War II banana shortage.
Sure.
Which means they actually used real bananas.
Wow.
And didn't want it to not be bananas. Right. They had to.
Yeah, they had to. Yeah. Right? Right. They had to replace it with synthetic.
That was probably before the golden age of synthetic flavors, too.
The golden age of...
Well, you know, I mean, these days you want banana flavor. I bet you anything there's no banana flavor.
Yeah, right.
And I'm not going to, you know, name any candies.
Wow. I did not know that.
There you go.
All right, we have our backer question here. This one is from Alicia Brown from North Haven, Maine. And her question is, when ICP first formed, ICP did not stand for Insane Clown Posse. What did it actually stand for?
It was for Internet Communication Protocol.
The more Silicon Valley jokes.
Incorrect. Oh. Though I'd be very impressed.
Ice cream party.
You guys aren't even trying now. ICP stands for Inner City Posse. And Elisha here is a huge juggalo and a nerd. So,
sweet.
All right.
Imparting some juggalo knowledge.
Are there any casual juggalos?
Right.
It's like, I am kind of a juggalo.
Yeah, it's very binary.
Yeah, right.
It's true.
You are or you aren't.
Right. It's true.
Her favorite movie is Dirty Dancing, and she gets Swayze crazy. I get Swayze crazy, too.
I want to see the Juggalo version of that movie. That would be awesome.
Oh,
get to it, Internet.
All right, everybody, time for our topic of the week. And our topic of the week is not gross like last episode. We got some complaints about us being
a little bit too
descriptive. So we're going with something a little bit more broad this episode, and we're talking about fashion.
Yes.
Fashion.
I thought, hello, new shoes, bye-bye and blues. Hey, I put some new shoes on and suddenly everything's right. I said, hey, I put some new shoes on and everybody's smiling, it's so inviting.
And I want to start off asking you guys, I mean, we've done stupid things when we were younger, including wearing stupid things or being obsessed about pretty silly fashion trends. What were some of your personal favorites?
By favorite, you mean you mean least favorite in retrospect.
You mean embarrassing things that we put on our bodies?
Pictures that you don't show people.
I'm gonna go first because the only thing I can possibly think of is I never ever cared about fashion at all. Anything, I would just wear whatever. I just didn't care. There is, however, a photograph of me in fourth grade with long hair, with like shoulder length hair. Aww. On an official school portrait on a laser background.
Nice.
You know how you get your portraits done with the lasers
in
the
background?
Yeah.
And I did that.
Wait, did you think it was cool?
Yeah, hell yeah, I did.
Yeah.
How long was it?
Oh, it was like shoulder length.
Oh,
you know?
Okay. So Hanson.
But on
style.
A fourth grader, it looked bad. It wasn't a mullet. but Hanson style. Before, if Hanson were fat.
Oh, so cute. I want to see.
The personal fashion with the hair, is different than the clothes. Like, at least the clothes, it's easier to rid yourself of the embarrassing stuff. I think for me, like, the one that I would be most embarrassed if I saw photos of today would be 13, I guess, around there, was we would really do the thing where you you fold over the bottom of your jeans and you roll it up. Is it pegging? Is that what it is? Or what do you call it? The jeans?
I thought we were going to be less gross this time, Colin.
The thing, where you...
It's called pegging.
All right,
sorry.
Yeah. But so you roll up the bottom of the jeans and you have like preferably the super high white top, white high tops, below them. And so we would have just these rolled up jeans and they'd be like mid ankle. I wore them, my friends wore them. It was what you did.
That's so funny. We used to tuck our jeans, the bottom of our jeans, into our socks, and like you wear maybe three pairs of socks in different colors. And like
that sounds so uncomfortable.
It was uncomfortable.
I was unfortunately a victim of skater and punk trends, and that included dyeing my hair very crazy colors and of course Janko jeans. And they're
you've mentioned these before.
Yes, Janko jeans. They're like normal jeans, but the legs are huge. You can fit like a person.
Yeah.
I once actually got into detention because my pants were too ridiculous.
They have a custom made detention slip. Pants, comma, too ridiculous.
God, it's so embarrassing looking at
and
pictures.
And they're way
now.
Bigger than your feet.
Yeah,
you know?
Like yeah. You can fit like two other people into those pant in those legs. Pants. Yeah. That's yeah. Well, yeah. We used to hide. We used to hide balls of booze. But
that, I was going to ask if that's what you did because I know what kind of a kid you were.
But when I was younger, and I know this was a fad in America and did seep into Asia, the fad was hyper-color T-shirts. Oh, do you guys remember that?
Oh, I totally yeah. remember
was
those.
It, was
yeah.
it what were, no matter what direction you looked at them, like they changed they, colors or...
They're mostly T-shirts. Yeah. The brand was Genera. Yep. It's called yep. Genera Hyper-Color. Yep. And basically, it changes color based on body
temperature.
Temperature. Do you remember that?
Well, no. No,
really?
I don't.
I remember these. I totally
really
remember these. Yeah,
bad.
I remember. Yeah, in a high school, I remember they came out.
And
yeah.
It's like they're usually like pastel-y colors. Junior, it was the 90s. Pastel was
yeah,
great.
Yeah.
It'd be like okay. pink, and then you would, you know, put your hand on it. And the warmth of your hand, yeah. You'd have a handprint and it'd become a different color.
And they were kind of splotchy, I remember. They weren't yeah. like a solid color. I don't know if it was something in the dye process. But what I remember about those is you weren't supposed to wash them, right? There was something about them and like
you can't
you could
put them
ruin
in the
them.
Dryer.
Oh, that's
yeah.
what it was. Sorry. You couldn't put them in okay. the dryer. Yeah, no, you could only
so
get it
also
you
smell
only wear it once and then throw it away.
Because the heat would
but
destroy
people would put them in the dryer and then it would destroy them. Yeah. And then you would see these people with these like ruined hyper-color
shirts. They're like splotchy. And kind of weak color.
It just
kind of
looked like
pale.
They spilled some yogurt on it or something
yeah,
at it, that point.
It looks like, or like washed out pen like stains or something. Actually read about how hypercolor t-shirt works. I mean, obviously we know that it changes color based on temperature, but how do they dye the whole shirt into chemicals? Mm. Wouldn't that be dangerous? So it's actually really interesting. So the t-shirt that you see, the t-shirt color you see is the color of the shirt itself and the color of the dye. So the special dye, thermochromic dyes, they're encapsulated in really, really, really tiny, tiny micro capsules, and that's woven into the fabric. Mm-hmm. And so when you see a regular hypercolor t-shirt, it's what you're seeing is the color of the dye and the color of the t-shirt. And so when temperature is applied to the dye, they become colorless. Mm. So the heated color you see is actually the real color of the shirt.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. So, okay. It turns them off. Heat
basically.
Deactivates the color.
Yep. So
got
it's
oh,
okay. on the whole time.
So, and they just were so ugly. I mean, I think we just convinced... No, I didn't own one, but I think people convinced themselves that, well, it's fashionable and high tech, therefore it must be
good looking.
I mean, kids don't know from ugly, though. You know, they know what's popular and cool.
Yep,
you know?
yep.
Oh, speaking of popular and cool but ugly in retrospect, like I had a knockoff cross-color shirt. I don't know if you guys remember cross-colors from the early 90s.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like one sleeve would be red and the other sleeve would be yellow the middle is green or something. It was part of this whole consciousness raising for Black youth in fashion. And,
right.
Like FUBU came out afterwards, but cross-color was so cool. It was on...
It was like Afrocentric.
It was Afrocentric. Yeah. They had logos like Stop D-Violence and Educate to Elevate. And it was, I mean, it's all positive and so expensive. So I had a knockoff version
of a knockoff cross-color.
Yeah. And like on the cover of TLC's first album, they're all wearing cross-color outfits. And it was on In Living Color and Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. It was the coolest.
Were they actually really expensive?
It was, yeah. I talked to my friends about it, my friends who also grew up with me, and we're, like, none of them owned cross-color. They're like, my mom.
So
yeah.
It's to inspire confidence in rich Black children.
Right. It's really for...
It's like, it's okay, you're rich.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, talking about jeans in terms of my embarrassing fashion that I wish I could erase.
Did you have acid wash jeans?
I did have acid
did
wash
jeans.
Did
you do jeans. It yourself?
No, I never. I don't think I had the confidence to do acid. I wouldn't think I would know even how to do that. But
bleach.
I guess, but it just seemed so hard to control.
What if it's all like white by the crotch area?
Yeah, you know, honestly, it was worth it to me to just pay the department store. But no, I did have acid wash jeans, and those were embarrassing enough. But imagine with the rolled cuffs at the bottom.
Oh man, so cool, so cool. My older sister, I remember when I was really young, my older sister was all, you know, about acid wash jeans, and she tried to do it herself.
Oh, no.
And it's basically you take a pair of jeans or whatever denim clothing, a nice jacket perhaps, and you have bleach, and you splatter bleach all around. But the thing is, I mean, I don't think she kind of understood the chemical process of it. Bleach, like, eats away
the fabric. Yeah, not just takes the color.
So eventually the white cool splotches become holes because they're like eroding.
Yeah, it totally weakens the fabric.
That was the fashion too, though, to have them all.
That's true.
So, you know, I mean, we all know, obviously, the father of blue jeans is Levi Strauss. You know, certainly everyone recognizes him as, and, you know, rightly so. So, you know, I mean, I knew sort of bits and pieces of the story, but kind of just was looking a little bit more into sort of how he actually got into the business of making blue jeans. And it's pretty fascinating. So it's, you know, like a lot of other things, he kind of got to start in the gold rush. So, you know, he was an immigrant family, and they had a good store in New York City, and he sort of came out to San Francisco at the height of the gold rush. He brought the fabric out, his really high quality cotton denim, really a denim or a twill, for tents was the main reason that he brought the fabric out, was for tent making, for a lot of people just making encampments in the gold rush. But he kind of found out eventually that he was selling a lot more of it made into pants and overalls and things like that, and that sort of became the direction that he went with it. So
much better than the frilly skirts that most
old yes, yes. But I tell you, the freedom of a denim skirt, there's nothing.
It's so airy and breezy.
Sorry, I guess it would be a kilt, you know.
Well, panning for gold makes you hot.
You gotta squat.
Yeah.
There's a lot of squatting.
You do have to squat. And in fact, so one of the really interesting problems that, you know, the early pants faces, they would wear out really easily.
Yeah.
So Levi Strauss's partner, who he worked with, was a man named Jacob Davis, and he was out of Reno. And so he was the tailor who really kind of crafted a lot of the pants. And he hit upon the idea the very first time of using metal reinforcements to hold together the seams. And, you know, of course, Levi's today are well known for the little copper rivets.
Yep.
So he had the idea of using the metal reinforcements, and he said to Levi Strauss basically, like, you know, hey, I need a business partner. Help me. Let's develop this together. You've got the fabric. I buy a lot of my fabric from you. I've got this idea. Let's make it work. And so they did. So they together came up with the patent. They were issued a patent on the little copper rivets that hold together the seams on Levi's, proceeded to make a fortune selling Levi's jeans.
I feel bad for him because he didn't get his name onto the brand.
They were on the patent, certainly.
Okay.
And he brought him in as a business partner. I think it was more like, I've got this idea. I need someone to help market it. You know, I don't think there was any ill will or anything like that.
Oh, good.
So, you know, really, and then they made a killing selling them to gold miners and people just sort of booming in the area around San Francisco. A lot of good, interesting trivia around Levi's and blue jeans in particular. So you guys know the classic little double arch on the back pockets of Levi's?
Oh, yeah.
Sort of the inverted arch. That is a name. It is the Arcuate design. Arcuate.
Wow.
And it actually is trademarked.
Is it functional?
It is. No, it's decorative, but it is a registered trademark of Levi's. They are the only ones legally allowed to put that design on the back pockets, and they fiercely defend it as their registered trademark.
How did they get the name?
I think, you know, probably some person in the marketing department at Levi's Strauss came up with the Arcuate.
They were drunk and passed out underneath McDonald's sign.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. Clearly it's based on the Ark, yeah. During World War II, you know, we were talking about shortages and things in World War II. You know, the government really placed a lot of restrictions on things that you couldn't do. And anything that was not...
Can't put bananas in these
anything
jeans.
That was not that was either not available or not essential to saving and conservation of raw resources. So the government said to Levi's, this is all true, the government said to Levi's, well, the thread that you're using on the double Ark design is decorative. It's not any part of the structure of the jeans. It's got to come off. You know, no using it for the duration of the ban on it. I mean, this is the level that they were conserving resources.
Yeah.
So during World War II, during this period, rather than risk losing their trademark, the arcs were painted on. So yep. If you've got a pair of Levi's with painted on Arcuate designs on the back pockets, you've got yourself a pretty rare item there from, wow. from the limited yeah. period where they weren't made with the actual sewn in thread.
Weren't they wow. wasting paint though?
I imagine that paint in terms of cotton was probably something they could get their hands on a lot yes. easier.
Wow.
Yeah. Crazy. So the other thing too is that back in those days they didn't really call them jeans. You know, we call them jeans now, but that's really a relatively modern term. I mean, that's more of like a 20th century term. I mean, they would have called them denim pants or denim trousers or denim overalls. Do you guys know where the term denim comes from? This is a good pub trivia one.
I believe it came from a city.
Correct.
But I forgot
correct.
Where.
Correct. You're absolutely right.
Is it so, the city of
Nîmes or something? French?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So from Nîmes, France. So the fabric that he used was a very specific
of Nîmes,
of type of serge. Nîmes. It was a very specific type of fabric called a serge, S-E-R-G-E. So it was known
like the soda.
It was known as serge de Nîmes, huh. serge from Nîmes, France.
Okay, where did jeans come from?
So jeans, and it's really interesting how these two names kind of converge together. So jeans come from a specific type of fabric that was really traced back to Genoa, Italy. And jeans come, the root is meaning of Genoa. We get it from the French word genus, like fabric of Genoa. So this type of very heavy cotton woven fabric was popular in Genoa for sails because it was so durable and ultimately sort of evolved into being used for durable clothing as well. And so the type of clothes made from that fabric eventually adopted the name jeans.
So, man, when we say denim jeans, we're referencing a city in France and then a city in Italy.
Yeah, you're very worldly when you're talking about your blue jeans.
Denim jeans.
And
wow.
so then the serge de Nîmes that was dyed indigo, you know, would frequently be used to make the kind of jeans, the denim pants and denim overalls that we now associate with Levi's.
I wonder why blue is such a predominant jean color.
It's the cheapest dye.
Oh, is it?
It was readily available. Yeah, I mean, even though historically, you know, go way, way back, it was really rare. But yeah, at the time they were producing these, it was readily available, and it, you know, it was really dark and durable. It was just great for utilitarian clothes, which is what, you know, blue jeans really were until the 50s.
I guess you wouldn't want a light color when you're working, because it would look dirty and gross.
Yep, that's right. That's right. Yeah, so much worldly interesting history baked out in there.
Wow, on a simple pair of jeans.
Yeah, yeah. And then, yeah, so as I say, I mean, it, you know, really up until the 50s, until, you know, James Dean and Rebel Without a Cause, it was, you know, they were utilitarian or working class or workers. They were workers' clothing.
So this actually relates to a quiz I have prepared.
All right.
And this fashion quiz, it's a little bit different. I'm going to name the item of clothing, and you have to name me what pop culture reference made it popular.
Ooh, okay.
All right, we'll try.
So an example would be, you know, I would say a pair of black and white checkered Vans, and where it was made popular by. In a pop culture reference would be...
Fast Times at Ridgemont High?
Correct.
Okay, all right. I see what you're getting at. Okay, all right, all right.
Ray-Ban Wayfarer's sunglasses.
CSI.
I'm going to say Risky Business.
Correct. Risky Business. Tom Cruise.
As and Joel.
Those pair of sunglasses are officially called Wayfarers. Yeah. Very, very popular.
I used to have a pair again in high school. I thought they were so cool.
They still are cool.
Yeah.
Okay, another Ray-Ban question. Ray-Ban Aviator sunglasses.
Oh, is it Top Gun?
Correct. Yeah. Tom Cruise again with Top Gun.
Ray-Ban just sends checks directly to Tom Cruise's house.
This fashion item is from the 80s. Leg warmers.
Flashdance?
Correct. Flashdance. The little black dress.
Oh.
I know this, but I forgot it.
Breakfast at Tiffany's?
Correct. Yes. Breakfast at Tiffany's. All right.
That was a little bit of a shot in the dark, but I can just picture her.
I'd heard this before, yeah.
The black leather jacket.
James Dean?
Correct. Rebel Without a Cause.
Mm. Yeah. Wow, jeans and the black leather jacket. Yep. Man.
Giorgio Armani.
Miami Vice?
Incorrect.
Mm.
It's Richard Gere from American Gigolo.
Really?
Giorgio Armani designed all of his clothes. And that made a very big statement. The whole like Italian menswear designer kind of craze got big in the early 80s and so forth.
Everybody wanted to look like a gigolo.
American gigolo.
I also know. Made in America with the best gigolos on the planet. We'll put our gigolos up against any gigolo anywhere in the world. We'll
put our gigolos against your juggalos any day of the week.
Yeah, we have juggalo gigolos only in America.
Okay, this is a really weird one. The fashion item is actually not wearing a fashion item and is not wearing an undershirt.
So starting a trend of not wearing
undershirt for men.
I'm not wearing one now, so whatever it was, I must be following it.
I'm going to guess like some, I don't know, farm laborer movie or some, I don't know. I have no guess.
No. So in the 1934, it happened one night. Clark Gable, there was a scene where he took off his shirt and he wasn't wearing an undershirt. And people freaked out, but in a good way. They're like, whoa, you don't have to wear an undershirt.
If Clark Gable can go without.
Oh, yeah. If he can show his chest, then my chest shouldn't be covered by an undershirt.
Liberating my male chest, just like Clark Gable.
Millions of housewives at the moment like, oh, no. No, or, honey, you're not Clark Gable.
Let him loose.
I can see through your shirt.
And the sales, undershirt sales, actually plummeted because of that movie. Because all these men were like, what? I don't have to wear a shirt if I don't want to. I'm an adult.
That's really interesting.
Just like Clark Gable.
That's really interesting.
And it actually, the sales actually didn't really recover until Rebel Without a Cause.
Ah, okay. Because
James Dean sported his white undershirt.
So he's got the trifecta there. He's got the black jacket, the white undershirt, and blue jeans.
Wow. Man. So that whole look.
And so now you guys learned something.
I did, actually. So in doing research for this, interestingly enough, I started coming across like fashion trends. Because I know nothing about fashion. So I'm like, where am I going to start? So I started looking at like fashion trends that originated with specific people. And so like there were...
James Dean.
It's always James Dean. One of the people who actually started two things, when we say started being popularized or caused a run on, was Farrah Fawcett, right? 1970s television star and model and fashion idol who, popularized the Farrah style haircut.
Right.
Remarkably feathered, long blonde look that looks
70s.
Like she just rolled out of bed. Yeah, very 70s, but like when you start thinking about it, it's like, wow, that must be really difficult to deal with all those pieces and perfect, like all in perfect place,
right?
But moving,
a symphony of hair.
But also, I had read that in fact she had brought back the one piece suit because of that world famous poster of her.
Oh, right,
a one piece bathing
red,
suit,
that red bathing suit. Right.
Apparently, the world's best selling poster ever.
I think I heard that.
Really?
Is that iconic shot of her? Apparently a very cold studio wearing a one-piece bathing suit, which actually sort of caused the one-piece bathing suit to become more popular than the bikini. But then also, we're looking at haircuts named after people, you know, if you wanted to get the Farrah haircut. There was also, in the 1990s, maybe you ladies remember this.
The Rachel.
This passed without notice for me.
I remember the Rachel.
Well, that's because you had a bob. Like, during that time. you should have gone for the Rachel.
I'll
play dumb, though. What's the Rachel?
The Rachel, I don't even know how to describe it. It is a woman's haircut. It is a medium, length.
This is so entertaining to listen to you describe this.
You guys can, I'll try first, and then you guys can tell me how you would actually describe it.
Okay.
But it's almost like you're wearing a space helmet. And it's like the hair is all in, it looks like a white woman wearing like very dainty dreadlocks, because the hair is all kind of pieced out into these pieces. And I'm making a space helmet around my head as I'm telling this. And there's like, but it's crazy, like there's highlights and lowlights, like there's, you know, really highlighted areas towards the front and really dark towards the back.
Uh-huh. And by Rachel, it's Rachel from Friends.
Rachel, the character from Friends.
Jennifer
Aniston.
When
they started this show, they gave her this haircut, and the show became so popular that people all wanted to copy this haircut and get the Rachel.
I cannot
secretly
believe you've never heard
of
Rachel.
It was secretly, Jennifer Aniston hated this haircut. hated
but she was stuck with it.
Was stuck with it, but they finally changed it like later on in the show after a couple of seasons, but she really, really, really disliked it.
That's
and of course it becomes this huge thing. How would you describe it?
It would be like a long, shaggy, layered bob.
Yes, exactly. Okay. That's exactly how I would describe it.
Okay.
Not like dainty dreadlocks.
Spot on. Not a space helmet of dainty dreadlocks.
If you look at pictures of it, it's like the hair is in like these longish pieces coming down. Like, I don't want to say dreadlocks because clearly Jennifer Aniston washed her hair. I'm saying that that's sort of in these like individual bits.
So just a heads up, if you're playing Draw Something with Chris and you see a space helmet made of dainty dreadlocks, the answer is Rachel.
Absolutely.
Oh, boys.
Describe something else for us.
It's a spinoff. I think we have a spinoff podcast here. Yeah, yeah. It's just Chris describing things for an hour.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Yeah, well, so it's funny that you mentioned swimsuit and Farrah Fawcett kind of triggering, you know, a move away from the two-piece.
Wait, so if she brought back the one-piece, mm-hmm. what was popular before, the two-piece?
The bikini.
I did a little bit of digging into this, actually. You know, I took the burden upon myself to look at photos of bikinis on the internet.
Oh, Colin, thank you.
For the greater good.
What
for
a
the greater,
hero.
Yeah. I took one for the team, so you guys don't have to. But yeah, I mean, the bikini
I did
really...
anyway. I knew you were doing it. Didn't stop.
The bikini is, I guess, strictly speaking, a subset of the two-piece bathing suit family. So two-piece bathing suits have been around.
This will be interesting to listen you describe female fashions as well.
Luckily, it's pretty simple, right? It's just a bunch of triangles over. Yeah. just a bunch of triangles. Yeah. Strategically arranged triangles.
Yep, that's
pretend
all
you're
it
an
is.
Alien yeah. and then cover
that's
it.
All I have, actually. Is that's all I found.
I just looked at a bunch of
So, guys.
As it turns out, the bikini
this just
is
in.
A bathing suit in two pieces. Trivia.
But this one really does have a really interesting history to it. And I think
really,
you know,
does
like
it?
I think, but trivia. Like, we probably a lot of people know that the bikini, like, it took its name from Bikini Atoll. So Bikini Atoll was an atoll is like a little coral ring island.
Is it atoll or atoll?
You know, I don't know. I always heard of atoll, but I'm sure. You know,
I have no idea what it is.
A T O L L. So it's essentially we're getting a little bit of geography here. So it's like a coral island that contains a body of water. Basically, it's like a ring out of coral with like a you know
like a swimming pool, like a
or like a lagoon
pool.
In the middle, right? So Bikini Atoll is a group of these out in the South Pacific. It's part of the Marshall Islands, but the U.S. did a lot of atomic testing there. Yes, and so they very publicly detonated two fission bombs there, and it was very public. It was the first atomic testing of any kind since Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Mm-hmm. So it caught a lot of attention.
And according to legend, a woman was standing in the blast radius.
Right.
It blasted off the middle of her
bathing
suit.
Off all of her swimsuit except for
the top and the bottom
triangles.
So
she died. Yeah. but the swimsuit lives on.
Yes, everybody else is very rich. Yeah. But that's the namesake of the bikini. But the true story of how it was invented, it gets even more interesting. So it is a French invention. It was designed
Of course.
But it was designed by Louis Rayard, who was a French engineer That's right.
Okay.
I said engineer. He was a French automobile engineer by training. Oh. But his mother apparently owned a fashion shop.
This story is getting weirder.
A lingerie store and shoe store, you know, in Paris. So he was running, you know, his mother's lingerie store in the 40s. And he eventually got into a design competition with a rival designer. And they were competing to see who could make the smallest swimsuit possible. So, yeah, of course, two French men, of course, would be.
Yeah.
But so that, you know, the two piece wasn't new. So they started with the two piece and just seeing who could make the smallest
and
two piece.
And just subtracting.
Subtracting fabric. So his rival was a man named Jacques Haim. And his came first, actually. He came out with a super, super skimpy two-piece, and he called it the Atom, l'Atome. Rayard, you know, not to be outdone, shortly thereafter came out with his design, which he was, I guess, really the first one to come up with the idea of, like, the string bikini. So it's like, get rid of as much fabric as possible, and literally triangles of cloth with strings connecting them. So his was smaller, and he named it the bikini, because he debuted it just 4 days after these atomic experiments in bikini.
That is kind of dark.
Huh. Weird.
So some people have sort of wryly noted, well, you know, the bikini split the Atom, l'Atome, the previous design. Mm-hmm. I think that's maybe a little too clever. But I think, you know, he was just grabbing something that was in the news and was sensational.
I thought I had to do something with bombshells.
Because of dropping
the bombs on bikini.
Nope. He just thought the name would really grab people's attention. And it was kind of scandalous. Like, at first, he couldn't get models to wear it because it was so skimpy. He had to hire a nude model, a woman who is known for nude modeling, to wear it at the first sort of fashion exposition in Paris to publicize it. So even though Himes was first, Rayard's was second, and bikini at that point just became the name for that type of swimsuit.
Wow.
But, you know, he was a good marketer. He insisted, like, it's not a real bikini, and these are his words, it's not a real bikini unless it could be pulled through a wedding ring.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
I've heard that.
I want to, like, just imagine the scenario. Like, how French is that? Again, it's like you're creating a scenario now where, well, I've got to take off my wedding ring and you've got to take off your bikini to see if it's real.
Oh, my God. That is...
That's good. Brilliant.
It's good, yeah. But very sleazy.
It's very sleazy. Well,
it was the 40s.
A lot of people actually have been asking us questions like, hey guys, can you, like, document where you get your information from? And you know, like, where do you guys read all this stuff? And the answer really is everywhere and nowhere. Like, you know,
Wikipedia.
Well, you know, Wikipedia is always a good starting place, but I always try to get, you know, multiple documented sources for everything.
Yeah.
In this particular case, I came across one particular article that I wanted to talk about. I thought it was very germane to the discussion, very funnily written. It's called Six Popular Fashion Trends That Kill People. It's by Alice Hester Jones, and it's at cracked.com.
Okay.
It's a really very funny piece. You should go back and do it. And it's six crazy historical fashion trends. And one of the ones that I had not heard about was that in the 19th century, men would wear these very, very high collars. You've probably seen pictures of men wearing super, super starched collars.
They're called bros, right?
Yeah, she makes a joke about that.
Yeah. Yes, right. Yeah, the super high collars.
High collars, and they would come up your neck, basically. And as the writer put it, these things were starched until they were almost bulletproof and jutted right up into your windpipe. What could go wrong? In fact, they actually called these things in several European languages. They called it the Vatermörder, or father killer. Because, like, people would die. Somebody almost killed himself on this thing, almost guillotined on it when he tripped coming out of a streetcar because he fell, and the thing just went up into his neck because it's just like, it's this very thin piece of cloth that's been starched, so it stands up, and it's just like a
knife. It's like a giant paper cut.
Yeah.
And also, if you fell asleep while drunk, like if you were just if you were just sitting up against a wall and fell asleep and your head
cut off
slumped
the oxygen
forward, go up into your windpipe and cut off your oxygen, and you would just die. You would just asphyxiate.
Maybe you'd throw up on it before that and, like, take out some of the starch.
What would
that would save you?
Pro tip.
Why did people wear these? Like, what?
Because it looked
fashion.
Good.
Fashion. I mean, why?
Yeah, that was the fashion. It was the style. You wore this, you know, very elegant looking high collar around your neck. It made you look like an aristocrat.
Makes you look tough too.
Yeah, like, you look very, like, macho.
Death come for me. I have blades around my neck.
There was also the crinoline, which I always thought was a type of fabric because I don't know anything about fashion, as we've now proven many, many times on this podcast. And it was, but what the crinoline actually was a metal hoop skirt worn under a skirt. Mm. So you wear this metal cage, basically looking like a bell on your leg,
like a bird cage.
Yeah. And then, you know, the skirt would just sit on that, so you'd have this naturally very big, billowy skirt that's sort of perfectly bell shaped around you.
But and it's huge because
there's a huge metal cage,
right? I mean, it's like the image of like the classic Southern Belle or the Victorian, right? The Victorian hoops or whatever.
The problem, of course, is that you're basically wearing a hang glider, and that if you let's say in this typical scenario you're standing on the pier waving your handkerchief goodbye at a ship, and suddenly a gust of wind picks you up and carries you out into sea and dumps you in the water. Well, guess what? You're attached to a iron cage and you die.
You're wearing tons of fabric too. Soaking wet.
But yes, Alice Hester Jones, very, very funny article on Cracked about killer fashion trends.
Oh,
the things
man.
We do for fashion.
Oh, speaking of like those big dresses, that was the weird fashion for women then, or the dangerous and kind of strange fashion for women, but men wore those big powdered wigs. Did you know what they're called? Do you know what the technical name is?
It's not powdered wig.
Well, you could call it that, but there are two other names that both begin with P that are they're fun words, actually.
Go on.
One is perukes.
Ooh. Perukes.
How's that spelled?
P-E-R-U-K-E-S.
Oh, that's a good crossword or Scrabble
perukes.
Word.
Ooh.
Perukes. Or periwig.
Oh, I've heard periwig.
It reminds me of a periwinkle. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, so a periwig or a peruke is a powdered wig.
They were in fashion for over 100 years, and when they went out of fashion, it was because the English government started imposing a tax on it, kind of a high tax on it, and then people were like, oh, never mind.
It's not worth it.
It's not worth it. It's cool.
I don't mind if it kills me, but if it costs me more money, forget it. Yeah.
Just for the powder for the wings.
All right, but, I have a little quiz prepared here.
Awesome.
That I has nothing gruesome or gross in it at
Yay!
All.
Yay! Okay.
So we'll switch it up here a little bit. This is sort of a geography and world information kind of quiz.
Ooh.
Nothing too hard. There's no trick questions, but there are a couple that are tricky. If you start off in downtown Detroit, Michigan, and you head due south, what's the first foreign country that you're going to hit? Chris.
Mexico.
Incorrect. I think that was Dana.
Guatemala?
Incorrect. Oh. Karen?
Cuba.
Incorrect.
What is it?
It is Canada.
Wait.
Canada curves underneath that part of Michigan. Yeah. So if you start in downtown Detroit and head due south, you're going to hit Windsor, Ontario, in Canada.
Fascinating.
Oh, no.
Directly across the Detroit River. Yes. So all of our Detroit listeners, I know you guys got that one.
Oh, wow. What? That is tricky.
That's a fun one.
Yeah.
Death Valley here in California has the lowest surface elevation in the continental U.S., 282 feet below sea level. What state has the highest point? What state has the That was Karen.
Yeah.
Colorado.
Incorrect.
What? It's called the Mile High State.
Chris.
Alaska.
It is Alaska.
Yes.
Mount McKinley has the highest. But even if you didn't include Alaska, it still wouldn't be Colorado. It would be California.
Huh.
California has both the highest and the lowest points in the continental U.S.
Huh.
This landlocked South American country once had a coastline, but lost its coastline in 1904. What country is this? Lost it through political reasons rather than natural disaster or something. Karen.
Paraguay.
No, not Paraguay. Chris.
Uruguay.
It is not Uruguay. It is Bolivia.
Oh, one in the middle.
Bolivia right there on the western coast of South America. Yeah, between Chile and Peru. Right. So that little area of coast has been hotly contested over the years. What country? What country has the longest coastline in the world? This is a good pub quiz one. We may even have had this one before.
You're absolutely right.
What country has the longest coastline in the world? Dana.
Canada?
It is Canada because of all the little island and coastlines. And if you look at Canada on the map, it's such a convoluted coastline. Yes, it is. Yeah, 125,000 mile long coastline.
Wow.
Canada. What is the smallest sovereign state in the world? Dana.
Is it Vatican City?
It is Vatican City. Yes. Vatican City, the smallest state in terms of area, also the smallest population. Only about 800 permanent residents in the Vatican.
So what technically counts as a sovereign state?
It's self-governing, self-regulating. It's not a property or a territory of any other country. It's recognized, most importantly, it's recognized by other world nations.
What are some other ones?
I mean, anything is a sovereign state. I mean, it's like Singapore would be like a city state or things
Got
like
it.
That. Yeah. I mean, so it is just tiny. It's 0.17 square miles. So just to put that in perspective, yeah. Central Park is about 7.5 times bigger than Vatican City.
Wow.
Yeah. It is tiny. What is the only country that does not have a rectangular national flag?
Oh.
So not a square or a rectangle.
Oh, my God.
I didn't know that was even okay.
Yes.
But I guess if they're sovereign, they can make it whatever they want.
That's right. Just to annoy the other countries.
Yeah.
I think Karen's working on it.
Time
is running out.
Not a rectangle.
Not a rectangle or a square. There are some countries that have squares. It's not rectangular. Squares, yes, right.
So it's going to be like a pennant, like a triangle.
Yes, yes.
Oh, wait, it's a country, you said?
It is a country, yes.
Oh,
Are a lot of mountains in this country?
Tibet.
Close.
Oh, Nepal?
Nepal.
Yes, Nepal. They have a double triangular flag. That's right. The only country whose national flag is not rectangular. All right, we'll close out here. We have a couple time zone questions here.
Oh,
all right.
I hate these.
How many time zones are there in mainland China? Karen.
8.
Incorrect. Chris.
7.
Incorrect. There is one time zone in China.
Oh!
The entire country since 1949, the Communist Party has standardized it. The entire country.
Of course.
I mean,
totally
think how efficient
sense.
That is.
The whole
think how efficient
the same
that
time.
Is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Quote, normally they would span about 5 time zones in terms of what we normally consider time zones, but they have one time zone for all of mainland China. So just imagine the difference in daylight there from one end to the other.
Wow.
That was a good question.
You get up at noon, it's dark.
Right. Yeah. Right. I'll close it out here. What country has the most time zones?
Not China.
Not China. That's right.
Is it United States?
It is not the United States. We're very close, though.
Okay.
Chris.
Canada.
It is not. for a change, it is not Canada.
Oh, man.
Karen.
Antarctica.
It is not Antarctica. They actually don't count that as a separate country. But
Antarctica would have one. Infinite time.
Right. Oh, true.
This one really blew me away.
Yeah.
I mean, it is France.
Huh.
What?
Because it includes things like dependent territories.
Oh. Okay.
So things like French Polynesia and Martinique and French Guyana are considered France. So that covers, France actually has 12 time zones. Now, in the more traditional sense, even if you feel that's kind of a cheating answer. Russia has the most contiguous time zones. So and the US has 11 if you count our territories as well.
These are good.
Those are good. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I have. So a little geo knowledge.
Quite a quiz.
There.
Yes.
Good quiz.
And we also it's almost time for us to go, but we have one more carryover challenge courtesy of Chris Kohler, Mr. Fashion.
Yes, Mr. Fashion, absolutely. So here's the thing. Here are 3 odd phrases.
All right.
Going to read to you.
All right.
The first is Coach Clone.
Uh-huh.
The second is 10 Dior bags, never fun.
Okay.
I disagree.
And the third, is Ray Unties LNA Vest. Ray Unties LNA Vest.
Ray, like the name.
The
Ray.
Name Ray.
Okay.
A guy, Ray, untying a vest made by the fashion house LNA.
Okay.
Ray Unties LNA Vest. Each of these odd phrases, you have probably noticed, contains the name of a popular fashion house.
Yes.
We have Coach Clone, 10 Dior Bags Never Fun, and Ray Unties LNA Vest. These phrases are also anagrams of the names of fashion designers.
Separate fashion designers.
Yes. They are 3 separate anagrams that are the names of 3 separate fashion designers. Name the 3 fashion designers.
Wow.
And that is your challenge for next week.
Wow.
Email us the 3 fashion designers to gjb.podcast@gmail.com and we'll select a couple random winners from the correct answer pile, and we'll send you some swag. Hmm. Yeah.
Cool.
Swag, swag, swag. All right, that's the end of our show. Thank you guys for joining me, and thank you guys, the listeners, for listening. Hope you guys learned something interesting about fashion and also geography. That was actually really, really fascinating. And you can find us on Zune Marketplace, on iTunes, and also on our website, which is goodjobbrain.com. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Thanks. Goodbye. Bye.
Hi, I'm Neil.
And I'm Ken.
And we are from the Triviality Podcast, a pub trivia-style game show where a lack of seriousness meets a little bit of knowledge.
Join us each week for an hour-long game of general knowledge trivia featuring special guests from around the world, plus tons of extra themed episodes.
If you want to improve your trivia game,
or you just want to scream at us in your car when we get easy questions wrong,
then we're the show for you. Find Triviality on all your favorite podcast apps.
But you know that, because you're already listening to a podcast.